They were carrying sticks. They were carrying bush knives. They were carrying stones. They were carrying hammers. They were carrying guns. We were lucky to get out there because we were supposed to be one of the people who got killed last night, but somehow we managed to escape.
The Kennedy Road was attacked on the last week of September. It was an attack by a militia. It was a complete surprise attack. Many of those people in the militia were armed. They didn't really succeed that night when they first launched their attack. In Victor's goal was to kill Spuza Korde, who's head of Abu Shali, and Mashumi Figland, who's second to Spu in the movement. And the reason why they didn't succeed was because Spu was actually not there at the time, but Mashumi was there. But people in the settlement
On the 14th of October, a constitutional court in South Africa ruled against the KwaZulu-Natal provincial government in favor of the Shack Dwellers movement. The court found that Section 16 of the Slum Act was unconstitutional. Richard Pithouse from the Shack Dwellers movement elaborates.
The state has increasingly been talking about slum eradication, which was a major feature of apartheid. And in 2006, they introduced a bill called the Slums Bill, which would not just give the state the right to evict people, but in fact compel the state and private landowners to evict people, an attempt to simply drive the poor out of the cities. Abushali opposed that bill, and when it became an act, they opposed it via popular protest and tried to create a sort of national discussion around it. But they also went to court. It was a long road, took a long time, but in the end, the Constitutional Court found in their favor and found that the Slums Act was unconstitutional and that the state cannot evict people without negotiating with them very carefully and without prioritizing upgrading their homes where they are. Transit camps were first introduced in South Africa in the 1930s, and they became a very important strategy for the apartheid state to evict in the 50s and the 60s, and then they sort of disappeared. But they've been quietly reintroduced to South Africa in the last few years without any kind of public discussion about them. They just sprung up without any kind of legal or policy basis. And basically, the function of a transit camp is to have a place to which people can be taken when they're evicted. But a transit camp, I mean, they're different in different parts of the country. They're either made of corrugated iron or sort of prefabricated kind of hardboard or something like that. They're usually one room. They often don't have access to things like water and electricity or toilets. They sometimes are fenced with searchlights and gates that can be locked at night. And it's just a way to take people who have been forcibly removed from well-located, centrally located shack settlements and dump them on the outskirts of the cities, but to still claim that they're being housed. But they're obviously not housing in any positive sense of the term. They in fact often look like concentration camps.
Legislation such as the Slum Act reveals that South Africa is a democracy in name only.
It's very important, though, that people understand that we've always had, since 1994, since democracy was first achieved in South Africa, we've always had a kind of two-tier political system to go with our two-tier economic system. So there's an economic system for the rich and a different one for the poor. There's also a different political system for the poor. So middle-class people have enjoyed liberal democratic rights. They can speak freely, meet freely, organize freely, debate freely. Poor people have often not been able to engage freely. It's completely have really given it the explicit sanction. So something has really changed in South Africa. I mean, politics has never been conducted according to the law, but we all knew the rules of the game. But the rules of the game have now shifted, and we're still trying to work out exactly what the new rules are.
Kennedy Road is currently in the hands of thugs from the African National Congress, but the repression is not limited to that community. Authoritarianism is spreading.
And the situation is still bad. I mean, the elected structures have all been removed. They've been replaced by unelected ANC structures. Things that are basically built in the settlements, like creches and so on, are no longer functional. So people don't have access to those community resources developed by the community, you know. For people who are political and who have been strongly supporting Abishali, things are very difficult. They are being subject to threats by the militia that have taken over the settlement. They are being forced to support the ANC on the threat of having their houses demolished. More than 50 people have had their homes demolished in recent weeks. So people who've been able to just leave, who've had other places to go, have just left. But activists who don't have anywhere else to go are really under serious pressure in a very, very difficult situation, because effectively Abishali has been banned from the settlement, although of course it does continue to exist in Kennedy Road in an underground way. People are still having meetings and so on. There's a strong feeling that the militia that have taken over the settlement won't be able to sustain consent for what they've done indefinitely. There may be an opportunity at some point for the underground organizing that's happening to become more explicit and to issue a direct challenge. But at the moment, it's very difficult because Abishali is not armed, and this militia that took over the settlements, the local ANC people are armed, and they have the full backing of the state. You know, anyone who's trying to resist them, immediately been arrested and put in prison. So it's a difficult situation. The problem is that there's no political freedom at all in Kennedy Road now. That supporting Abishali openly puts you at tremendous risk. And that's all backed up by local party political activists, ANC activists, who are backed by the state. So, you know, for it to turn around, the state is going to have to stop backing those people. And for the state to stop backing those people, it's going to have to realize that the cost for backing that militia are greater for it than the benefits. And if there's enough pressure in the country and outside, the state may realize that it stands to really be embarrassed and to lose its democratic credibility, which is very important to some people in the state and in the party, not to all. So perhaps pressure forces the states to realize that their actions are going to have a price. It's not worth paying. I think that if the state stops backing the militia, the fact that they're a minority will mean that they can't control the settlement anymore, and it'll be fairly easy to restore sort of democratic rule of the settlement. But that's not going to be possible for as long as they have the backing of the states in the form of the peace. So pressure on the states is what's going to be essential. But in some of the other settlements nearby, people have been threatened, especially kind of authoritarianism from the state that even starting to affect middle class people. For example, someone that I know wrote an article in a newspaper about the attacks, and then got a phone call a couple of days later from the South African Secret Service, the intelligence agency, asking him various questions. No, I mean, nothing actually happened to him, but it's still clearly an attempt to extend the intimidation that's happening in Kennedy Road outside of it, not just the other settlements, but even to other kinds of people who have taken a public stand against what has happened.
Richard explains the importance of international and South African solidarity.
Well, there's support from other poor people movements around the country, you know, the anti-eviction campaign in Cape Town or the landless people's movement in Joburg. And there's going to be a meeting in Johannesburg on Thursday. The Zabalazer Anarchist Communist Front has already organized a meeting of all the movements in Joburg, and they've decided that they're going to organize a protest in solidarity with Abushali. So they will meet with Abushali on Thursday in Johannesburg and look practically at how to move that forward. There's been very strong support on the university campuses. There's been protests by students and a lot of invitations for Abushali activists to come to campus to speak, to give presentations. There's been no real support from trade unions, which is a pity. Poor people's movements have often supported trade unions, but they've been very reluctant to support these movements. There's been brilliant support, though, from the churches, as I said, from students and from some academics. There's also been fairly good support from sections of the media who've taken the state's claims and subjected to thorough investigation and found them very much lacking. The support is growing, but it's been mainly concentrated amongst students, amongst other poor people's movements, and amongst churches. People have organized protests in Auckland, in New Zealand, in New York, in London, and on university campuses across South Africa. And that's been really effective in making it clear to Abushali that they're not alone and giving people courage. It also made it very clear to the local media and to local politicians as well that, you know, there are some people around the world who are watching the situation, who are taking it very seriously. And that does help to sort of constrain some of the excesses from the political elite. It also helps the local media to take this seriously. I mean, a lot of the media here don't take poor people seriously and are very willing to look at poor people through a highly prejudicial kind of lens, to see people as criminals or in some sense not deserving of full consideration. So to see that Abushali has been taken seriously around the world really does help. It's also just really important for people to keep informed. I mean, it's difficult for the movement at the moment to stay in touch with people like it used to. I mean, the Abushali office has lost, people have lost regular access to email. It's sometimes difficult to put out press statements because it's not safe for people to attach their names to statements and so on. But the movement has tried its best it can under very difficult circumstances to keep up a fairly regular flow of information. And it's really important for people to stay in touch with that, to be aware and to share it amongst the kind of progressive community around the world, because, you know, it's a major attack on the biggest poor people's movement in the country. It's a major setback for democracy in South Africa. It's a major turn towards repression. And if it's allowed to go unchallenged, then it won't just be Abushali. Clearly, other movements will be subject to similar kinds of repression, and it will just steadily become impossible to have a popular radical project organized from the base of society and of, you know, outside of control of party politics. So there's a lot at stake, and there's a lot worth defending. And the small gestures, people writing articles, sharing information, protests, staying in touch, issuing statements of solidarity, all of these help. They all incrementally add up to a really strong rejection from people around the world of what has happened. And that carries quite a bit of weight in South Africa. At the solidarity that has developed. And I think without that solidarity, things would be a lot worse. You know, the state really can draw on prejudices against poor people to mobilize the middle classes against the poor. But the fact that Abashandi has the support internationally in the sort of progressive network, I think really has been important in reducing the degree to which the state can just go out and demonize people. Make sure before commenting, Mabu Yapu Kukanga Matolo, even that we are Tandas. Cause the Kanyelita Akutavin, the Tato Patin, Boba Estra, Palace Casatana. If we sell the clever by Absolva, Abalindi, Nasapsu, which you will talk on Wokilaga, Tabun Kaba, Koku says keep on, Koto Sautitu, Sagas Kalum, Kasipun, Kondonga Bokata. Make no mistake, the culture Akutanga, Casatana, Kutatam, I don't know you from the Papa. Make no mistake, the culture Akutanga, Casatana.
This is Steve 1.0 signing out for Society as a Prison Radio.